information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
There are only two emotions in a plane, boredom and terror. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 152 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's January 8th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of Media Monarchy. For all your alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, all the Flight 253 updates in the TSA, Terranoia, Obamasiah, and the expansion of the War of Terror, featuring a cast of thousands, including Joan Rivers, Dick Cheney, Michael Yon, Ron Paul, Casey Johnson, and all the patsies, privates, leaks, and lockdowns in the New World Order, and so much more. It's all here, episode 152, January 8th, 2010, and this is MediaMonarchy.com.
Swells. We stop at the best hotels, but we prefer the country far away from the city smells. We're a couple of sports, the pride of the tennis courts. In June, July, and August, we look cute when we're dressed in shorts.
The Vanderbilts have asked us up for tea.
We don't know how to get there, no siree,
no siree.
We would drive up the avenue, but we haven't got the price. We would skate up the avenue, but there isn't any ice. We would ride on a bicycle, but we haven't got a bike. So we'll walk up the avenue, yes, we'll walk up the avenue, and to walk up the avenue's what we like. Wall Street bankers are we, with plenty of currency. We opened up the safe, but we forgot where we put the key. We're the favorite lads of girls in the picture ads. We'd like to tell you who we kissed last night, but we can't be cats.
The Vanderbilts are waiting at the club.
But how are we to get there? That's the rub. That's the rub.
We would sail up the avenue, but we haven't got a yacht. We would drive up the avenue, but no horse we had was shot. We would ride on a trolley car, but we haven't got the fare. So we'll walk up the avenue, yes, we'll walk up the avenue, yes, we'll walk up the avenue till we're there.
Yes, yes, yes. That was Fred Astaire and Judy Garland singing a song called A Couple of Swells. And I think that sets the table quite well for a show that will be dominated with the theme of mass transit. and then it's usually probably better to just walk anyway. I think in the song and in the movie that it's from, they're playing poor characters but singing a song about how great it would be in these fantasies of, of course, the Vanderbilts waiting at the club and Wall Street bankers and such. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 152 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. It's January 8th, 2010, and I'm coming to you live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And of course, thanks to our fine list of affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, also blasted and out terrestrially live out in Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1500 AM. The worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, 1 p.m. on the East Coast. And thanks to Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM. 87.9 FM in Canton, Georgia. Thanks to Ground Zero Radio. 104.1 FM, Berkeley, liberationradio.net. 90.7 up in Kisilov, Alaska. Thanks to OneSkyRadio.com. My man Glenn from right here at CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And of course, Radio23.org. You can, of course, make contact. Trying to do a little more outreach in this new year. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. MySpace.com/Media Monarchy. Twitter. YouTube. You can email me, MediaMonarchy@Yahoo or Gmail. Skype is fired up. Instant Messenger is fired up. And you can get all the podcasts and videos anytime, all the time, on iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. I, of course, have to tell you our opening quote comes from the man himself, Orson Welles. There are only two emotions in a plane, boredom and terror. And we've got a lot of paranoia to go over in this episode 152. And we always like to look at what's happening in the news world, live as I'm coming to you again on this January 8th, 2010. And this is fitting for breaking news for this episode. Smoke smell halts Boston takeoff, delays some flights. Traffic was briefly halted at Boston's Logan Airport after a Delta Connection flight headed to Columbus, Ohio, aborted takeoff and evacuated passengers because of a smell of smoke. Airport spokesman Phil Orlandella says takeoffs and landings were halted for about a half hour, and the flight itself was aborted at about 10:30 a.m. East Coast time. 25 people plus 3 crew on board. Orlandella says the smell may have been caused by de-icing fluid, but it's still under investigation. Some of the other news, Canadian stocks claw for gains after jobs data. We're going to get to that econo-crash data later in the show. The ghosts of the previous puppet administration, they keep popping up. Dick and Rudy. But we're nonpartisan here. Both sides of the two major parties prop each other up. They're completely corrupt. They keep us in the WWF fake shell game. Anytime there's any kind of grassroots movement to get outside of that, you see them co-opt that movement. Whether it's well-meaning folks on the left or the right, both get hoodwinked. They sell us out. Oh, and of course, we'll mention the Dems, who were all about the financial New World Order last year. Or was it the year before that? The bailout senators are, of course, now bailing themselves out. They need to spend a lot more time with their families suddenly. Suddenly they're family men. But all that is coming up. So we're going to try and do this in order. And I don't have a lot of different posts on MediaMonarchy.com this week. There was essentially a handful of entries that I just kept adding to and updating because it's essentially all the same story, whether it's in Portland, Oregon, or Newark, New Jersey, or LAX, or God knows where, all around the world. Which reminds me, I'd like to say thank you and hello to my man Christopher in Germany, who hit me up on Instant Messengers just a little bit ago. I'd like to ask everybody who's a fan of the show to help try and spread the word about it, which actually, sidebar again, reminds me. A guy I knew back in West Virginia from public school sent me a message saying someone sent him a New World Next Week video that I do with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. When he saw the episode a couple of weeks ago that I did while I was in Fayetteville, West Virginia, this friend of mine from West Virginia sent this video and said, "Hey, aren't you from this place?" Brian watched the video and was like, "Wait, I know that guy." It's a small world indeed, and again, we can all get in touch with each other. We've never been so close yet so distanced. And we try and spread and share information. I'm not trying to tell you what to think. I'm trying to add context and subtext to all the news that swirls around, information overload. I try and do some data mining and put it up in a new context for you. So hopefully it makes a little more sense than if you were just listening to the 24/7 blather of the mainstream media. So the first post we are going to hit on MediaMonarchy.com is Obamasiah and the expansion of the War of Terror. So we're going to take it back to Sunday. You know, that's the day when all the talking heads get to talking. This article by way of Kurt Nimmo: Obama sends John Brennan to sell the Yemen attack on the Sunday news shows. Obama dispatched John Brennan with, of course, contextual links for you to read more about all the cast of criminal characters. Again, that's what I try and do in the post, is give you the roots to follow. Beginning again. Obama dispatched John Brennan to the Sunday talking head shows to peddle the "Al-Qaeda's gonna get us" message. "We're determined to destroy Al-Qaeda," Brennan told ABC News this week, "and we're working very closely, not just with the Yemenis, but with our international partners, with the British and the Saudis and others, to make sure that we provide the Yemeni government the wherewithal to carry out this fight against Al-Qaeda. Brennan's message lines up nicely with the one delivered by Gordon Brown last week, with links for you, pitching the body scanners. More on those in just a few moments. Tons of headlines and updates to this. By way of Independent, asking the musical question, are planned airport scanners just a scam? They are, but in a number of ways, not just in your wallet. False flag event in Detroit, a pretext to invade Yemen. That, as well as more on the Haskell family, if you'll recall, Kurt Haskell, eyewitness on Flight 253, saying a well-dressed handler essentially got this guy on the plane. Fitting the patsy profile of essentially a drooling low-level intelligence person being shepherded and helped and funded and prodded all along the way until the precise moment when, oh my God. So, Kurt Haskell and family have pointed out that the FBI has changed its story four times, and theirs has stayed the same since day one, Christmas. But of course, Obama has tied the airliner plot to Al-Qaeda's Yemeni affiliates. That's from the Washington Post. The other two, as well as this, from InfoWars. Obama blames Al-Qaeda for Christmas false flag and sets the stage for a Yemen attack. Which he will manage to do with left cover. And that's the best way to criticize the current puppet. Is do it from the left. Los Angeles police beat and detain UK activists protesting new war in Yemen. That's from indymedia.org. Alex Constantine, as always, does a great job of breaking down yet expanding and filling in the picture of what he's calling Underpants Gate, Big Oil, CIA, and the attempted bombing of Flight 253 as justification for military ops in Yemen and Nigeria. That's where Mutalab is from. He's actually Nigerian. U.S. and U.K. closed embassies in Yemen over threats. I believe those are now open again. So that's just the post from going back to Sunday. With getting the message rolling into the new week, into the new news cycle. And of course, it wasn't just John Brennan. I'm sure if you watched any of those shows, they were all filled with people. Basically talking about how much more war and loss of liberties and destruction there will be. Not whether there will be any or should there be any more, but how much more is there going to be. So that post was Obama Saya in the expansion of the war of terror. And we move a day or so later. And this by way of Raw Replay, Think Progress, and Raw Story. Ron Paul slams Dick Cheney. Dr. Ron Paul told CNN's Larry King that former Vice President Dick Cheney doesn't have any standing to criticize Obama's handling of terror threats. See, of course, now Cheney was getting into the act. Acting as though Obama has made some big break from the war of terror. As if there's been any deviation from the plan. The project for a new American century, if you will. So let's listen to a quick moment of the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul slamming Darth Cheney.
Well, I think he had his 8 years, and he's caused a lot of trouble for our country, and he perpetuated a war in Iraq that was unnecessary and wrong-headed. So I would say that it'd be best he not be so critical right now. But I'm still not only critical of that policy. I think the policy remains the same, and we've heard it on the show tonight already. They are going to attack us, and they've declared war against us, and it's always they and them. But who are they? You know, after 9/11, 14 or 15 of the terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. I mean, we didn't attack Saudi Arabia, we attacked Iraq. So it doesn't make sense. And those individuals were trained or at least planned in Germany and Spain. Some of them even got trained here in the United States. So you don't declare war against these countries and say that we have to go in and start bombing Pakistan and bombing Afghanistan and bombing Yemen. They happen to be there, that's true, but they're there because we stimulate them. We've fallen into the hands of Osama bin Laden by us doing there and causing people to get so angry, it helps his recruiting efforts. He has written about this. He has said this. He says, I want the Americans to come over here and get bogged down, bankrupt their country, and besides, it will help my recruiting efforts. And we're doing exactly what he had planned.
Now, aside from him quoting what most agreed to be a dead man, that's Emmanuel Goldstein, Osama bin Laden, But he's right. Even if you believe the official story of 9/11 and the War of Terror, if you look at what bin Laden says, it's because of your foreign policies. Let's now jump to the massive post. This would be the key to get all the Flight 253 updates, patsies, privacy, lockdowns, and more. This post is now probably a few pages long as all the updates get added day by day. But we're going to start with some new work from Webster Tarpley. And first, I want to mention that finally, he's got his website, tarpley.net, all updated, all in order, and now it looks like an alternative news website should look. Like a blog with the articles and the links and the latest episodes and videos and things of his radio and video work and interviews and all that. Tarpley.net, T-A-R-P-L-E-Y.net. Webster Tarpley, author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in the USA, Surviving the Cataclysm, pretty much predicting the controlled demolition of the world economy, and two books on the Obamasiah, the postmodern coup, and the unauthorized biography of what Tarpley is good at is pointing out the history of black ops and the networks. The global networks, if you will. And what he brings to light here and what he points out is an interesting one. It made me think, and I believe we referenced James Douglas last week, author of JFK and the Unspeakable. It brings up those thoughts that when James Douglas was here, a lot of the folks in the audience, again, this was pre-election, when James Douglas was here in Portland, Oregon, worried about Obama going up against the military-industrial complex. Oh my God. They'll get him. I never saw him as a threat to the military-industrial complex, because if you look at the money and the funding and what he's really actually done as opposed to what he said, it was going to be more of the same, but with a slicker ad campaign for it. But in the comparison to JFK, who was no saint, but my loose understanding is that he essentially, once he found himself in the office, looked around and said, I'm surrounded by insane people with insane agendas. The Bay of Pigs, all that stuff. Said he wanted to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter its ashes to the wind. He maybe wanted to, get rid of the Federal Reserve. Fired Alan Dulles. What I'm saying is, Tarpley is here bringing up the possibility of Obama's investigators getting into all that surrounds the strange case of Flight 253. Would he uncover the black ops being run by the rogue networks of the Western finance oligarchs and the military-industrial complex? So the article that I turned into a question with the headline, Obama to probe network of moles behind Christmas patsy fiasco. Officials in the Obama White House are considering the possibility that the Christmas Day attempt by Nigerian terrorist Umar Farouk Mutalab to blow up an airliner about to land in Detroit was deliberately and intentionally facilitated by unnamed networks inside the U.S. intelligence community. This was the gist of a report by Richard Wolff delivered in the January 5th edition of MSNBC's Countdown with Keith Olbermann. This report came on the eve of a special White House interagency conference convoked by Obama to deal with the massive systemic failure of U.S. intel in allowing the Yemen alumnus Mutalab to board the Amsterdam to Detroit flight while allegedly carrying a PETN explosive device on his person. Let's listen to Richard Wolff discussing these crazy conspiracy theories on Countdown.
With us again tonight, MSNBC political analyst Richard Wolff, also author of Renegade, The Making of a President. Richard, good evening.
Good evening, Keith.
Last night on this program, you reported the White House investigation includes, among many things, addressing whether somebody had critical information but did not pass it on, perhaps intentionally. Can you explain some nature, some more clear nature of the scenario they might have been looking at when and why it remained on the radar?
Yeah, well, for a start, the president effectively closed the door to much of this inquiry today by calling it, and the White House telling everyone he called it a giant screw-up. In that sense, it's closer to the cock-up rather than the conspiracy I talked about. And by the way, let me just clarify, when I mentioned conspiracy or cock-up yesterday, I wasn't talking about, as some online commentators have interpreted it, a political plot to embarrass the president by allowing civilians to die. This is really gets to the heart of intent versus pure accident. And intent can be non-malicious. It can be a failure to cooperate. It can be a lack of confidence in the system, which the president has also concluded that's where he's at. And one thing that the president didn't refer to today, which is very revealing, was what he picked out, first of all, in Hawaii, the story about Abdulmutallab's father going to the CIA in Nigeria and telling them about the radicalization of his son and the fears about his son. That information in the early reports was not shared. The president confirmed that it wasn't shared. The CIA and other reports compiled a dossier on Abdulmutallab, which was not also apparently shared. He doesn't want this blame game anymore. The president understands that that can be corrosive. He wants to look at the how things can be fixed rather than the why they were broken in this case.
Lack of confidence in the system and the response to it being don't put the information into the system. It sounds like something we had in football the other day, the player who refused to play so the team announced it was benching him. How do you protect the value of the intelligence or the value of your own intelligence networks by not putting the information into a system, no matter how broken that system might be?
Well, ultimately, you don't actually protect the value, of course, because other people cannot act on it, and intelligence that cannot be acted on is not actually useful in terms of disrupting these plots. So if you stand back and look at it like that and look at it from the end point, of course, it doesn't make any sense. But this is a system that the administration has inherited. And look, the way they're talking about it tells you a lot. You would not have heard President Bush saying that the edifice established after 9/11 could be this faulty and this prone to error. And also to this lack of cooperation, which gets you to a totally dysfunctional system as we saw it over Christmas.
To the on-the-record stuff from today, what else do we know about today's meeting?
Well, some classic Obama positions here. He goes around the table asking people to blame themselves. So it's a blame game on your own house. And they seem to think that that's effective. Clearly, the president has increased the pressure on everyone. We in the media, of course, love the blame game. It is insightful for us. It's a great story. But the president made it very clear that this is going to be about moving forward, not looking back.
But Mr. Obama said in that public statement this evening, that there will be accountability but no finger pointing. How do you know who to hold accountable if nobody's pointing out who they are, the finger or otherwise? And the White House said that all the relevant agencies took responsibility, much as you said there, but how do you take real responsibility if you're not doing so in public but rather in private?
You don't, and this is the same set of problems that the Bush administration faced. How open can you be? Here you have a president who is admitting fault. He doesn't obviously mind, as President Bush would have minded, that the terrorists find out all sorts of spots of weakness here. The weaknesses are exposed because this guy broke through every piece of system and all the intelligence was out there. I think that what we're going to see typically for this administration is that changes are made over time. People are eased out and there will be shakeouts, but it won't be one big fell swoop, one big structural overhaul.
MSNBC political analyst Richard Wolff, also author of the book Renegade, The Making of a President. As always, thanks for your time tonight, Richard.
Thank you, Keith.
So the day after that clip that we just listened to with Richard Wolff talking to Olbermann, Obama gave a speech that essentially all then says we're moving forward and not looking back, and it was a cock-up and not a conspiracy. There'll be accountability, but no one will be fired. Business as usual. If we get the update again from Tarpley.net, Obama's situation offers certain parallels to the experience of John F. Kennedy in the Bay of Pigs invasion of April 1961. Upon entering office, Kennedy had been convinced by Alan Dulles and Richard Bissell of the CIA to support an invasion of Cuba, which the CIA promised would lead immediately to an insurrection throughout the island and thus to the overthrow of Fidel Castro. Instead, the invasion was a catastrophic failure and humiliation for the U.S. and for Kennedy personally. When Kennedy came into office, he had been inclined to work closely with operatives like Dulles and Bissell, who personified the rogue network in its then-current form. Helped along, according to some accounts, by General Douglas MacArthur, Kennedy realized that the geopolitical forces behind and above the presidency, which were seeking to use him for their own ends, were also more than willing to ruin him politically and to cast him aside as an expendable puppet at the first opportunity. Over time, this led to Kennedy's deep and abiding mistrust of the rogue elements dominating the Pentagon, CIA, FBI, and other elements of the U.S. government, a mistrust which allowed Kennedy to resist the lunatic proposals for general war advanced by rogue elements during the Cuban Missile Crisis. In the short run, Kennedy's Bay of Pigs experience impelled him to fire Alan Dulles, Richard Bissell, and CIA Deputy Director Charles Cabell within less than a year after the failed invasion. Obama needs to imitate Kennedy's response on the fast track. We have related updates, and many of them. From a man, Jeffrey Long, over on the East Coast, in the District of Criminals. Redactednews.blogspot.com. Northwest Flight 253 intel failure. Negligence or conspiracy? Mounting evidence of U.S. complicity in terrorism. That's from globalresearch.ca. The strange case of Umar Farouk Abdul-Muttalib. From Tom Burkhardt on anti-fascist calling. Underwear bomber false flag to be exploited to renew draconian Patriot Act. Watch lists grow as Obama meets with security team. That's from the Associated Press. But Washington's blog has a pertinent question. Given everything that's happened, shouldn't we at least ask? Ask what? You may ask. Given that Cheney is apparently at least partly responsible for creating the terror problem in Yemen, and that one of the most highly decorated soldiers of all time says that, quote, war is a racket. Given that FBI and CIA, constitutional law professors like Jonathan Turley, Time Magazine, Keith Olbermann, The Washington Post have all said that U.S. government officials, quote, were trying to create an atmosphere of fear in which the American people would give them more power, end quote. And we know that truth is the first casualty of war, and that fear of terrorism makes people stupid. Isn't it worth at least asking whether we can rule out false flag terrorism? Shouldn't we at least ask? Richard, your government failed you. Clark says that the Detroit Christmas incident is just what we need to get over our privacy fears. As an interesting angle, as we now get into a little bit of the body scanners, invasion of the body scanners, those are those terahertz waves. They're blasting you in more and more airports, more of your money going into the scanner scam. An interesting angle to this. Airports set to become primary peddlers of child porn with body scanners. Sometimes you got to fight the police state with the tools that you have available, and sometimes those tools are using their own laws against them. Child porn's illegal. You're making pictures showing the genitals of small children when they go through these scanners. Military-industrial complex to make a killing from body scanners. Interestingly enough, from the Australian.com.au, MI5 knew of Mutalab's UK extremist links. Just another example of how we knew about this guy. The next false flag. That's from Kurt Nimmo going into an attack on the U.S. Embassy in Yemen. Questions mount over attempt to bomb Detroit-bound jetliner. Again from Global Research. Obama's war on Yemen. That's from PAC Alert. However, Yemen dismisses Al-Qaeda threat as exaggerated. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Now, here is an interesting one. And we're going to start to paint this picture with the next couple of stories and with what my theory may be. I may have had a headline from this in my initial posting about the Christmas Day bombing, but I haven't dug it up. But fortunately, theendrun.com goes into the other Christmas arrest uncovered, and guess what? It was the same route, the same airline, and the same day, just on a different flight. On the day of the Flight 253 incident, reporter Michael Rosenfield of WXYZ in Detroit appeared live on CNN during the evening news and reported that earlier that day, another passenger was arrested on a different flight from Amsterdam to Detroit. Same route, same airline, same day. This report appears to have been corroborated by a woman who was apparently a passenger on that flight in an on-camera interview, an interview which was played at least once on CNN on Christmas. However, the media subsequently blended this separate incident with the widely reported failed bombing incident. Hence, the many media reports of Mutalab screaming about Afghanistan, despite the fact that the witnesses actually describe him as being amazingly calm and totally silent. The video is available, so let's listen to reporter Michael Rosenfield of WXYZ in Detroit talking about the other Christmas arrest.
We've also learned about another incident also on board a flight from Amsterdam to Detroit this afternoon. Another passenger was arrested on that flight as well. Federal officials and local law enforcement here don't think the two incidents were connected, but it also did happen on a flight from Amsterdam to Detroit. A passenger was yelling pro-Afghanistan statements, anti-American statements as well. He was throwing food on passengers in the back part of the plane. He was taken into custody, but law enforcement officials here on the ground tell us they think it was just a drunk passenger. They do not think these two incidents were connected. Michael Rosenfield, back to you.
Was that a Northwest flight as well coming in from Amsterdam, or is that a different flight?
Yeah, that was also a Northwest Delta flight, also coming in from Amsterdam to Detroit. Another incident on that case, but again, law enforcement officials think they were not connected, but pretty coincidental that it both happened on the same route and in the same day.
Pretty coincidental indeed, my friends. Now let's shift gears slightly and get a story from RTE News out of Ireland. Explosive reached Ireland after failed test. A quantity of explosive found in a flat on Dorset Street in Dublin was brought into Ireland following a failed security operation in Slovakia. The explosive was one of 8 pieces of contraband planted by the authorities in the luggage of unsuspecting passengers at Bratislava Airport in Slovakia last weekend as part of a test security procedure. 7 were detected by airport security, but the 8th, 90 grams of research development explosive, or RDX, was put into the luggage of a Slovakian electrician who lives and works in Dublin. The 49-year-old unwittingly brought the material to Dublin when he returned from Christmas holidays. So they were running a drill of planting fake explosives in people's luggage. Let one happen, stop the rest. 7 were detected, 1 got through. A drill of putting fake explosives into your luggage. It's just a drill. However, for a little bit of comic relief, from SAWFnews.com. Joan Rivers not allowed on flight due to suspicious passport. Comic Joan Rivers was barred from getting a flight because airline officials deemed her passport suspicious. The acid-tongued star was trying to fly from Costa Rica to Newark Airport in New Jersey, but as she tried to board, the 76-year-old was pulled to one side after a Continental Airlines security agent checked her details. Her passport reads, Joan Rosenberg, a.k.a. Joan Rivers. Rosenberg, her late husband's last name. The fashion-loving Rivers said afterwards, if I were going to make up an alias, I wouldn't pick Rosenberg. I'd pick Jolie or Pitt. And I can tell you that Donna Karen doesn't make anything that hides a bomb. I tried the tears. They didn't work. I tried reasoning. I couldn't bribe because I didn't have any money. I said, I'm going to have a heart attack over this. So the woman called the paramedics. Joan Rivers eventually managed to get a flight home the following morning. I don't recall who it is off the top of my head, but there was some other low-level celeb who was trying to fly out of Costa Rica with difficulty. But now we jump to Newark, New Jersey. Newark terminal locked down as search continued for a man. Authorities were searching for a man who walked through a screening checkpoint exit into the secure side of a terminal Sunday night at Newark Airport, and flights were grounded and passengers being re-screened, an air safety official said. There are photos and we have links to not only CNN and ABC and WCBSTV.com, but to the video I swiped from CBS2 and posted up to YouTube.com/Media Monarchy, where we discover, interestingly enough, that the TSA surveillance cams didn't even work at Newark.
Tonight, following that security breach at Newark Airport that stranded thousands of passengers for hours, CBS2 has learned that a series of missteps unnecessarily added to the mayhem on Sunday. Here's political reporter Marcia Kramer.
The sign at the TSA screening post at Newark Liberty Airport says premises under constant video surveillance. What it should add is if we're lucky, because CBS2 News has learned that when an unidentified man breached a secure area at Newark Airport Sunday night, delaying thousands for hours, the TSA cameras weren't working. That's right, they weren't recording, sources say, and needed a reboot, which the agency apparently didn't ask for. That set off a chain reaction of even more missteps that caused needless chaos and inconvenience for several thousand hapless passengers. With their cameras inoperable, the TSA tried to get a second set of surveillance video from Continental Airlines, but TSA apparently didn't know the correct telephone number and the specific procedures to get the footage. That caused a two-hour delay in identifying the intruder and closing the airport to look for him. And when they finally got the footage, they couldn't find the intruder, discovering later that he had slipped out another entrance 20 minutes after he arrived.
The questions I would ask is why should there be an independent camera system there?
Senator Frank Lautenberg is furious about what happened, and he's going to hold hearings to demand answers.
You cannot afford mistake here any more than a surgeon in the operating room in this system was broken.
But that's not all. Listen to the plight of the Edwards family of Ontario, Canada.
We were a minute away from boarding.
The family was left to wait for hours and hours with no water, no food, no information about whether their plane would take off, and no hotel.
They gave us one of these packages with toothpaste and toothbrush and hairspray in it.
That's it?
And deodorant.
And we just want to go home.
There's been a lot of blame and finger pointing, but as of now, if this were to happen again, there's no guarantee that it would be handled smoothly. At Newark Liberty Airport, I'm Marcia Kramer, CBS 2 News.
There is no guarantee. That's the fallacy of all of this. Give us more money and more control, and next time we'll keep you safe. We swear. You know, and those who give up liberty for security deserve neither. And the horrible updates keep coming. I believe now we're up to this past Wednesday, January 6th, 2010, by way of Paul Joseph Watson, as well as blogcritics.org, biggovernment.com, and more. Military blogger Michael Yon, Y-O-N, detained and handcuffed by TSA in the Seattle airport, a war reporter who was detained, interrogated, and handcuffed at Seattle Airport for refusing to answer personal questions about his income, has warned that Americans need to start standing up to TSA thugs because entering the country is now a more stifling experience than some of the worst police states on the planet. Michael Yon wrote in a Facebook message, quote, "No country has ever treated me so badly. Not China, not Vietnam, not Afghanistan, definitely not Singapore, India, Nepal, or Germany, not Brunei, or Indonesia, Malaysia, Kuwait, Qatar, UAE. No country has treated me with the disrespect that can be expected from our border bullies." With a link there, interestingly enough, to an article of Michael Yon's from last year called Border Bullies, which no doubt aided in his harassment at the Seattle airport. Yon was taken aside by the TSA and asked a series of questions, many of which seemed to have no bearing on national security. Finally, when asked what his personal income was, he refused to answer because he felt it was, you know, none of their business. At this point, they handcuffed him and detained him until he was eventually released by Port Authority police because the TSA had no legitimate grounds to hold him. Yon said that his experience was par for the course when entering America and not a manifestation of the Christmas Day attacks. We have a brief clip with military blogger Michael Yon talking about the TSA thugs.
The absurdity here is that Michael Yon, war correspondent, is getting stopped and hassled, whereas, you know, apparently we let people with underwear bombs, you know, kind of around as they will. Did this create a scene, you know, at the airport?
No scene whatsoever. Again, I always assume everything is being videotaped and audiotaped at all times. There was absolutely no scene at all. And they, you know, led me away and handcuffed me in a room. So, you know, it's just nonsense that Americans are putting up with. We only have to deal with this because we put up with it. I mean, look how many hassles you go through going through airports. I mean, it's incredible. It's unbelievable what we will allow our government to put us through.
And what happened once you were handcuffed and taken to the side room? What was the progression from there, and how did it ultimately come about that they said, all right, maybe we overreacted here and realized you were in the right?
Well, they never made any admission like that. I mean, the police just basically came and took me away and released me.
Yeah.
The Port Authority police. But there was no admission from TSA. I mean, probably today they're waking up and realizing that it's a mistake to ask American citizens, you know, how much money they make at the border. And, you know, if they don't get the hint now, that
right.
They never will. I mean, if we don't stand up to them, they will continue to infringe on our rights.
Let me ask you maybe a little bit of the devil's advocate question here, because you talked about Israel, and Liz and I have been through security at the Israel airport. In fact, Liz was detained because she's very suspicious, and her camera.
Still never received my camera.
You never got
still
your camera.
Still waiting on
back.
That. Yeah.
So now, but they didn't shoot
they
your,
took your camera.
They took my camera and wouldn't give it back.
So the last little mention there of Israel, notwithstanding. I believe the longer interview, I think, basically shows that Michael Yon isn't really an anti-war guy. I believe he's still down for the war of terror. But perhaps experiences like this are maybe changing his mind a little bit. That may be a little too much to hope. But that's military blogger Michael Yon, and you can get more from Michael Yon -online.com. And there's still more updates from the last day or so in this Flight 253 updates, patsies, privacies, lockdowns, and more. And we'll hit another one from redactednews.blogspot.com. Dutch authorities claim no accomplice in airport, contradicting, of course, the eyewitness accounts. According to Reuters, Dutch authorities have announced that Mutalab, the terrorist who penetrated the Dutch security system on Christmas Day on Flight 253 to Detroit, acted alone and with no accomplices at the Amsterdam airport. This, of course, directly contradicts the firsthand eyewitness account from Kurt Haskell, a lawyer from Taylor, Michigan, who was on 253. We've all reported about Mr. Haskell's account. He also did an interview with Andrew Breitbart, and I believe that's what the clip from Michael Yon was, the B-Cast So the Dutch are saying he was a lone gunman. A lone nut. Again, reminding you, contradicting the eyewitness accounts of the well-dressed handler. Who would he say, I'm from Sudan and we do this all the time? National Security Advisor says the airline bomber report will shock. White House National Security Advisor Jim Jones. Oh, I'm sorry, James Jones. Says Americans will feel, quote, a certain shock, end quote, when they read an account being released of the missed clues that could have prevented the alleged Christmas Day bomber from ever boarding the plane. Publishers dumbfounded by airplane book ban. That's from the globeandmail.com, and I believe it's now been revised. You can actually take books that you bought in the airport onto the airplane. That was one of the massive amounts of things that they started to ban and change everything at the last minute. If we have time in this episode, and we're going to jump over to one of my sister sites, cyberspacewar.com, we'll get into more of the TSA intimidating bloggers who've posted up documents that weren't even leaked. They weren't even private. The TSA harassing bloggers over on cyberspacewar.com. However, continuing down the Flight 253 updates here on MediaMonarchy.com, Ottawa ordered airline scanners months ago. This from CTV, and that basically shows how well these things are planned, if you will. So the Ottawa is saying, we're not reacting to all this stuff going on right now. We ordered these things months ago. The real purpose of the body scanners, perhaps, breaking the will of the people. We also note that videos from Newark Airport were released while the Amsterdam video remains under wraps. We've got a quick, great clip from one of the few people in the White House press corps who asks uncomfortable questions. On C-SPAN, Helen Thomas hits the fundamental points. You never explain why they want to do us harm. You never tell us their motivation.
Was there an outside contractor used for security in Amsterdam? And also, what is really lacking always for us is you don't give the motivation of why they want to do us harm.
I should take the first part, and then, John, you can address the second.
The screening at Schiphol Airport was done by Dutch authorities, and they did the screening that was described to you earlier this afternoon. The hand luggage was screened. The passport was checked. He went through a magnetometer, but it was done by Dutch authorities.
And what is the motivation? We never hear what you find out
of war. Al-Qaeda is an organization that is dedicated to murder and wanton slaughter of innocents. What they have done over the past decade and a half, two decades, is to attract individuals like Mr. Abdulmutallah and use them for these types of attacks. He was motivated by a sense of religious sort of drive. Unfortunately, Al-Qaeda has perverted Islam and has corrupted the concept of Islam so that he's able to attract these individuals. But Al-Qaeda has the agenda of destruction and death.
And you're saying it's because of religion?
I'm saying it's because of an Al-Qaeda organization that falls, that uses the banner of religion in a very perverse and corrupt way.
Why?
This is a long issue, but Al-Qaeda is just determined to carry out attacks here against the homeland.
But you haven't explained why.
Can we clear up a couple of things, either one of you? First of all, what was learned while the flight was underway?
So that's the next reporter asking a question, leaving Helen Thomas hanging, where it's like, yeah, but you never said why. Because it's a long topic, and they have to move on. So many interesting things to talk about in that piece, I think. Because even if, again, you buy the official story of the events of 9/11, again, we already mentioned Emmanuel Goldstein in his writing said it's because of your foreign policy. It's because you occupy our lands. and who helped create Al-Qaeda? Again, even if you believe all of this garbage and black ops and lies, who helped fund them against the Soviets in Afghanistan in the late 70s? Ask Zbigniew Brzezinski. Ask Robert Gates. And they say, oh, it's because of religion. It's perverted Islam. Okay, if that's true, who helped do that? Watch The Power of Nightmares by Adam Curtis. Watch Who Killed John O'Neill? Who made some of those new textbooks about Islam and killing? So that's, you know, that's just limited hangout stuff. If you don't ultimately know that Al-Qaeda is probably just the database, the base of ex-Mujahideen fighters that we've trained that we can use as double and triple agents. But there's still more updates on Flight 253. These from just this morning. As I prep the show, there are times where I literally just have to say, okay, stop. I can't add any more info. Inverted body scanner image makes genitals eerily visible. Something tells me that won't be on the ad campaign. The new body scanners make your genitals eerily visible. And there are the photos and the documentations to back it up. Again, thanks to Paul Joseph Watson. Interestingly enough, the NCTC head, Michael Leiter, L-E-I-T-E-R, that's the National Counterterrorism Center, not the National Conservation Training Center, as is located in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, that some of us believe may have taken over for the old bunker at the Greenbrier in West Virginia, but I digress. Michael Leiter, the head of the NCTC, kept on skiing after he heard about the Christmas bombing attempt. That's from the New York Daily News. Again, security officials ignoring Flight 253 witnesses. That's from the Montreal Gazette. And our last note on this update page on Flight 253, patsies, privacies, lockdowns, and more. It just gets better and better. TSA agent arrested at LAX after, you know, talking about, I am God, I'm in charge.
Let me set the scene for you for the latest incident. It was this past Sunday night here at LAX about 7:30, probably crowded because a lot of people were coming home from the New Year's holiday, when suddenly a man starts acting strangely. He starts saying, I'm God, I'm in charge. LAX police and arrest that man, and he turns out to be a TSA agent. They are the first line of defense in airport security, Transportation Security Administration agents. But there have been two troubling incidents involving LAX TSA agents recently. A source tells Channel 4 News a TSA agent was arrested on January 3rd here at Terminal 1 at LAX. He'd just gotten off duty and was behaving erratically, saying, I am God, I'm in charge. The agent was arrested under the welfare code and could have been hospitalized in protective custody for up to 72 hours. Meanwhile, a TSA internal affairs investigation turned up evidence of LAX TSA agents using drugs at an after-hours party. TSA officials say a videotape of the party was of poor quality and the employees were not in uniform, but four employees were tentatively identified. All four were tested for drugs. One came back positive, and that employee was fired.
I am God, I'm in charge. We're going to hit one more major post on MediaMonarchy.com relating to the TSA paranoia. Two questioned as jet returns to Portland, Oregon after a low-level problem. And this is when it really hit me that the TSA is on a roll and now it's getting kind of close to home. As everything post-Christmas bomber hoax, the paranoia spreads like a contagion. This from the Associated Press from Wednesday, January 6, 2010. Two people were questioned by the FBI this afternoon in connection with an airliner being recalled to Portland International Airport when at least one passenger became disruptive during a flight from Portland to Hawaii. Authorities said the airliner was escorted back to PDX by two F-15 fighter jets. after a passenger became disruptive. A spokesman for the North American Aerospace Defense Command, that's NORAD, says the fighter jets intercepted the flight at about 1 p.m., again, Wednesday, January 6th, shortly after the airliner's pilot decided to turn around. Keone Wagner, vice president of public affairs with Hawaiian Airlines, said the passenger failed to cooperate with crew and it was not a security matter.
And good evening. Thank you very much for being with us. And first on to a Salem man sparks a mid-air scare over the Pacific Ocean.
Let's look at this animation. It shows the Hawaiian Airlines jet. It left PDX at 10:10 this morning heading for Maui. After an incident involving a 56-year-old passenger, it turned around at 11:40 and headed right back for Portland.
Just as we were learning about the incident, someone sent us this picture via Twitter. The person who sent it says it shows a passenger in custody on the right in what appears to be a baseball hat after he's led off the plane by police at PDX. The officer is there on the left. A woman traveling with the man was also taken from that plane. K2 Shelley Bailey Shaw is live at PDX.
So Shelley, what do we know about the passenger and what he did or said aboard the jet?
Well, Deb, we don't know exactly what he said, but we know that it was considered a serious enough threat to turn that plane around. And as you mentioned, we have learned from the FBI that the man was a 56-year-old from Salem. Now that plane, that flight was over the Pacific when the pilot made an announcement. An announcement that ended up being a lie. These folks were on the flight.
The pilot says that we have a mechanical issue and we need to turn around just for safety. And so we turn around, come back, and we land, and it was kind of a bumpy landing. And once we landed, we saw fire trucks, and they were following us up to the entrance to the airport. And
you're a little worried at this point.
Yeah, I'm very worried.
It happened so quick. We looked up, the police were on there. Next thing you know, the baggage was being taken up from the compartment, and that was it.
So when you say baggage was being taken up from the compartment?
The bags that they had carried on.
After that, Jeff and Michelle and another man insisted on getting off the plane. They were simply too shaken by what happened to continue on to Hawaii. The plane was searched and cleared, and about after 2 hours on the ground, the flight did take off again. Now, in addition to that threatening remark, TSA has confirmed that the passenger had a duffel bag that he was refusing to put in the overhead compartment. But here's the curious part. The man and his companion were interviewed and released just a little while ago, and we're not giving his name because it hasn't been released. He hasn't been charged with anything. Live at PDX, I'm Shelley Bailey Shaw, K2 News.
I know it's been referred to the U.S. attorney at this point, Shelley, but I'm sure it surprises a lot of our viewers that everything that happened, they brought that plane back to PDX and the guys just let go.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, this was a really traumatic event for the people who were on that plane, especially in light of what happened Christmas Day. And so you would think that there more would come of it, but apparently that's not the case.
All right, we'll learn some more, hopefully, in the hours to come. Shelley, thank you.
Well, the jet was escorted back to PDX by two F-15 warplanes from the 142nd Fighter Wing. This is video of one of the jets landing back at PDX shortly after the Hawaiian Airlines jet. The 142nd Fighter Wing is responsible for flying air security missions over the Northwest.
I think so much of what we've discussed in this first hour is crystallized in this story that lands right here in PDX. That photo, as well as that video that I swiped from K2, video is available on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. So basically, the pilot lied about a mechanical problem. It wasn't a security matter. It was just because he failed to cooperate. They get in two F-15 fighter jets escorted back to PDX, which, of course, I'm sure we would have liked for that to have happened on September 11th, 2001, but that's neither here nor there, is it? They let him go. Well, and of course, it was because he was trying to cram his bag in the overhead compartment, which everyone is trying to do now. I think, as I said last week, after I'd been out of town and taken off from the show through December and when I traveled, they now charge you to check any kind of luggage. Used to think, you know, that was kind of part of the deal, that I'd want to bring luggage and you would put it in the belly of the plane for me. That's all extra now. So everyone's trying to cram as much as they can into the cabin of the plane. And there ain't much room. I referred early to what I think a lot of these things go together as in the story it kind of paints to me and what it makes me think perhaps, possibly, could be going on with all of the TSA paranoia, it is almost as if there are some type of drills being run. TSA agents saying they're God at LAX, Newark on massive lockdown, F-16s coming to PDX, oh, F-15s, I'm sorry. Michael Yon, the Detroit event, the other Amsterdam to Detroit event. We've talked a lot about the drills and the black exercises that go on. And that when you look at the major terror events like 9/11 or 7/7 and others, there are concurrent drills occurring that just somehow, miraculously, coincidentally involve the exact same things at the exact same times doing exactly what goes live. A dozen plus drills being run by the military of hijacked jets crashing into government buildings happening on 9/11. Peter Power of Visor admitting they were running drills in London on 7/7, the exact same buses, the exact same trains, at the exact same times. Astronomical. And now, every day, every several hours, we're seeing a new airport event. Spreading like a contagion, like I said. I hope that I've given you a good breakdown on all the Flight 253 updates. We've got a lot to get into, even though now we now are into hour number two of episode 152 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's January 8th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberSpaceWar.com. It may make us run short on time, but I think it'll be fitting, and it'll give all of us a brief break. Let's end that whole mass transit TSA paranoia, and let's hop an airline to heaven with Billy Bragg and Wilco.
Time. You can fly to heaven on time. got ears, let them hear. Them's got eyes, let them see. Turn your eyes to the Lord of the skies. Take that airline plane, it'll take you home again. To your homely outer skies. You obtained in this heavenly airline plane. You leave your sins behind. You've got to take this flight. Maybe the daytime might be night. But you can't see a ray of your blood. Them's got ears, let them hear. Them's got eyes, let them see. Turn your eyes to the Lord of the skies. Take that airline plane, take you home again. Do you hold me in the sky?
Billy Bragg and Wilco, Airline to Heaven. Welcome back to episode 152 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster. It's January 8th, 2010, and we still have much news to discuss. And now it's time for another massive data dump. It's a news purge. Asking the question, so this is the new year? When I post up News Purge, that's essentially just a ton of headlines that I don't have time or the page space or the mental fortitude to explore in greater detail. So let's see what we can do here on the 1-7 News Purge. So this is the new year. Starting, of course, with all the latest 9/11 updates and another great piece from redactednews.blogspot.com noting that the deep state does not respond to FOIA requests. This is actually an article from Sheila Casey in the Rock Creek Free Press. Profiling the work of 9/11 researcher Aidan Monahan, who we've mentioned frequently on Media Monarchy, doing yeoman's work, filing FOIA request after FOIA request relating to the official story of 9/11. But Giuliani is back, and he's repeating a bit we heard several weeks ago from Dana Perino, ex-White House spokesperson from the previous puppet administration. And there is the video, thanks to Raw Replay, where Giuliani says, we had no domestic attacks under Bush. Did you get that? And from the Wall Street Journal, as of this morning, two more World Trade Center victims identified. That's right. New York City has positively identified two more victims from the September 11th attacks after retesting DNA remains found in and around the World Trade Center site. The medical examiner's offices said Thursday that both victims were women. It said it was withholding their names at the family's request. One of the victims was identified from remains using newer DNA technology developed in 2006. The city said a total of 25 victims have been identified through this new technology. More than 1,100 of New York's 2,750 victims have not been identified because of many of the more than 21,000 remains found were too badly compromised by heat and time. The city is continuing to retest thousands of remains. But again, somehow they knew all the names and had all the passports and various bandana and contraband from all the 19 hijackers. But into the BioWar and EnviroHealth updates, a follow-up on something we mentioned last week, this time from EUtimes.net. Obama orders U.S. government to begin preparing for biological attack. Do you remember when we referenced Obama authorizing the Postal Service to deliver all your necessary vaccines in case of a catastrophic and catalyzing event? Whole Foods CEO denies climate change. But more importantly, from the Washington Post, use of potentially harmful chemicals kept under secret law. Or rather, kept secret under law. Of the 84,000 chemicals in commercial use in the U.S., from flame retardants in furniture to household cleaners, nearly 20% are secret, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Their names and physical properties guarded from consumers and virtually all public officials under a little-known federal provision. Policy was designed 33 years ago to protect trade secrets in a highly competitive industry. But critics, including the Obama administration, say the secrecy has grown out of control, making it impossible for regulators to control potential dangers or for consumers to know which toxic substances they might be exposed to. Which is an interesting way, again. Not if you'll be exposed, but which ones? 2.4 million pounds of plastic pollution in a world's oceans every hour. Plastic islands at sea. That's from Cryptogon. A fascinating one from the New York Times. CIA revives data sharing program with Enviro scientists. That's right, the Central Intelligence Agency is involved in the coming climate control that will do nothing to deal with the real environmental catastrophes happening with GMOs and Monsantos. The pollution, and the poisons in the water, in the food world order. No, we need to pay carbon indulgences to the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and Gores and all the folks who have a stake in carbon indulgences. They just happen to be involved in the bankster organizations. It's just a coincidence. And the last note by way of ArsTechnica.com, time to ban mountaintop mining due to externalized costs. A couple notes on the drug war. Professor Peter Dale Scott on Obama and Afghanistan and America's drug-corrupted war. That's from GlobalResearch.ca. And an interesting one from AllGov.com, how to buy marijuana legally in California. But it gets uglier as we get into the EconoCrash updates. Again, Ars Technica asks the question, antitrust? U.S. to review the Comcast-NBC deal. Goldman Sachs offshore deals deepened global financial crisis. Big surprise there from McClatchy. More from AllGov.com. U.S. losing centuries-old businesses. So much is happening, we're probably really not absorbing all of it. Editor and Publisher Magazine, after 125 years, is dead. Small bookstores in Wisconsin, department stores in South Carolina, candy factories in Virginia. We haven't taken it all in yet. Dead malls are probably just the beginning. The Los Angeles Times fortunately notes that Ron Paul's ideas are no longer fringe. Personal bankruptcy filings rising fast, again from the Wall Street Journal. living on nothing but food stamps was a big front page above the fold article from the New York Times a few days ago. Job satisfaction in the U.S. at record low. And just this morning, we discovered that Walmart and H&M's in New York destroyed clothing, you know, instead of, like, donating them. People found them in the dumpster. Warnings of a massive dollar collapse. That's from the Telegraph. Another new one from allgov.com. AIG beats out United Airlines as the most hated company in America. Imagine this question on Family Feud. Corporations Americans hate most. Answer, AIG. This conclusion was reached by the website 247wallstreet.com, which examined hundreds of companies using data based on employee impressions, returns to shareholders, customer satisfaction, brand valuation, viewpoints, taxpayers, Congress, administration. You want to hear the list? From 15 to number 1. Number 15 is Sprint. Forever 21, Gibson Guitar, Rite Aid, Dish Network, Chrysler, Abercrombie & Fitch, Dell, Blackwater, Kmart, Citigroup, Hertz, Level 3, United Airlines, and AIG. However, back here in Portland, Oregon, we discover that most of the funds for minority businesses go to white men. And what's popping in the news today on January 8th, 2010, employment drops by 85,000, but the U.S. jobless rate stays at 10% for December, from the LA Times and economicpolicyjournal.com, respectively. The last Econo Crash Note is another great video interview under the Economics 101 series from my man James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. The latest one with Catherine Austin Fitz on shunning the banksters. And now some geopolitical notes. And this is something I haven't given enough attention to. But that suicide bomber in Afghanistan several days ago. Afghanistan suicide bomber may have been helped by CIA informant. That's from the Wall Street Journal, and ABC News has CIA attacker driven in from Pakistan. Remember those double and triple agents we were mentioning before? Iran denies entry to Senator John Forbes Kerry. Meanwhile, Tehran planning major military exercise. Another great one from CorbettReport.com, and this is actually also printed and published on the January 7th edition of the Japan Times newspaper. The civilian death toll in the Iraq War tops the new list of the top 25 censored stories of 09 from Project Censored. U.S. refuses Afghan government demands for arrest of U.S. death squad who cuffed and killed 8 kids. That's from Examiner.com. U.S. forges alliance with Saddam Hussein officers to fight al-Qaeda. That's from The Telegraph. Israeli military officials cancel trip to UK over possible war crimes arrests. There are times I, you know, get a kick out of thinking of all the war criminals around there who can't visit certain places because they'll be snatched up. I always hope I'll wake up and see that Kissinger was on some plane that had to be diverted to Chile. And let's end the geopolitical updates with a little bit of satire from The Onion.
The situation in Great Britain remains turbulent after new reports that Prince Charles has brutally seized the throne of England and imprisoned several members of the royal family, quote, for their own safety. According to Lord Hugo Featherstone, Charles has become increasingly impatient with his mother, Queen Elizabeth's continued reluctance to attack the Kingdom of Spain.
Ever since being asked to leave a nightclub in Barcelona in 1973, Charles has craved the utter destruction of Spain.
That was one of their weekend reports, which does actually go on to have some other funny things about hamburger buns being declassified by the CIA and stabbing camp. Again, The Onion does it so well. It's not that broad, lowest common denominator satire that you get on Saturday Night Live. But back to the news purge and a couple history mystery notes. Again, we've been featuring repeatedly my man Jeffrey Long of DC 9/11 Truth and Rock Creek Free Press and the website redactednews.blogspot.com. The wealthiest head of the CIA and control of the media, that would of course be Poppy Bush. Vatican reveals secret archives. That's from the Telegraph. And there's an interesting video we don't have time for, and it's of poor quality. You must watch it yourself, where famed playwright George Bernard Shaw defends Hitler and mass murder, exposing more of the connections to the Western finance oligarchs and intelligentsia and all their connections to the eugenics. Hitler didn't make it up. He learned it from them and thanked them, and gave people like Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood awards, and she praised them, called black people weeds. It's also interesting to note he's the only other guy to win a Nobel Peace Prize, or a Nobel Prize and an Oscar, just like Al Gore. Interesting notes on the media and the memes. Starting with a flashback to The Guardian, Body of Lies and the CIA's involvement with U.S. film. Body of Lies, of course, being the Ridley Scott film. Ridley and his brother Tony both being no strangers to working with the CIA on their films. Body of Lies, Enemy of the State, Top Gun, on and on. A couple notes on the new Sherlock Holmes. Copycat Effect goes into Sherlock Holmes and the Ripper killings, and Dot Connector UK goes into Sherlock Holmes, the film, and our Illuminati New Age religion. MNN.com asks the question, is Avatar radical environmental propaganda? Fascinating discovered quote-unquote lost episode of the cartoon Pinky and the Brain. And it's called They. Secret Societies That Rule the World. That cartoon is available, I believe, in its entirety up on Vimeo. The War on Tupac and Radical Blacks. Again, from Redacted News. Polanski lawyer asks court to sentence him in absentia. We've been following the case of Roman Polanski, and I implore you to check out my interview with Peter Lavenda, author of Sinister Forces, where we go deep into Roman Polanski, Sharon Tate, Aleister Crowley, Charles Manson, all those sinister forces, all those connections. We also have an Australian ad from KFC, the artist formerly known as Kentucky Fried Chicken, that shows you how to placate threatening black people with fried chicken. You can watch the ad for yourself and decide if it's a racist KFC ad. On to the murder and mayhem. Two federal agents shot in Las Vegas. Turns out to be 66-year-old Johnny Lee Wicks, as his body was identified in the Vegas shooting. Cell phone videos and others from Raw Replay, as well as Copycat Effect. And an interesting note, by way of the Buzz Blog, or Buzz Log, on Yahoo, something I hadn't heard of, but it's only popped up on their sort of gossip page. Searches surround Casey Johnson's death. Casey Johnson was just 30 years old when she was found dead in L.A. on Monday. Reps say she passed away of natural causes. The young socialite's death has sparked a slew of headlines and web searches. Miss Johnson, an heiress to the Johnson & Johnson company fortune, was no stranger to the public eye and to controversy. Casey's father was New York Jets owner Robert Wood Johnson, Mr. Johnson purchased the Jets in 2000 for $635 million. The Jets are currently one of 12 teams in the NFL playoffs. Her uncle Jamie made a splash in 2003 with his documentary, Born Rich. In recent months, Ms. Johnson had been romantically linked and engaged to reality TV star Tila Tequila. And it goes on with People magazine and TMZ-related garbage. But anytime wealthy kids are turning up dead, it's quite interesting. And again, the connections to Robert Wood Johnson and the Johnson Foundation. And Born Rich and all of those things are there to explore. Four dead in California chopper crash. An interesting flashback on LeesburgToday.com on the Loudoun County Year in Review. Crime spree ends in violent beating, death of William Bennett. The murder of William Bennett is something we followed quite extensively last year. It was a random, seemingly random beating in Loudoun County last February. And it turns out the guy was ex-CIA and involved in the faulty, quote-unquote, bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. U.S. carried out 52 executions in 2009. And just this morning, St. Louis factory worker opens fire, killing at least three. This, interestingly enough, happened at the ABB Group, Swiss-based. I believe it's A.B. Brown, Alex Brown. That would be the company that Donald Rumsfeld helped sell nukes to North Korea. Yes, that's right. That's how we roll. We fund everyone. Then we can say they have weapons. It's all on the grand chessboard. And the last note on the murder and mayhem, MiamiHerald.com. Aspiring Michigan model found burned in a Miami trash bin just a day or so after attending a Lady Gaga concert. Lady Gaga with all her Masonic Illuminati occult symbology. Check out VigilantCitizen.com for more on that. But now it's on to the Obamasiah. White House press corps warned about asking certain questions. This from Wayne Madsen of WayneMadsenReport.com, where they have learned from a veteran member of the White House press corps that the Obama administration has made it known through White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs and other White House comm officials that certain questions posed by the reporters who cover the White House are definitely off limits. On the banned question list, or anything about Obama's post-Columbia employment with Business International Corporation, a global financial and political info company that Wayne Madsen Report previously reported was and is a front for the CIA. BIC-CIA. White House press corps members have been quietly told that any questions related to BIC, Obama's withheld records while he was a student at Occidental College in L.A. from 79 to 81, or his records at Columbia are forbidden. At the same time he was attending Occidental, Obama, using the name Barry Satoru and an Indonesian passport issued under that same name, traveled to Pakistan during the U.S. buildup to assist the Afghan Mujahideen. That article from Wayne Madsen goes on, and I wonder if we just a little bit ago listened to a clip from that unnamed veteran member of the White House press corps. And the bailout bastards jump the ship. North Dakota Senator Dorgan announces he won't run again. Connecticut Democratic Senator Christopher Dodd won't seek re-election. Colorado Governor Bill Ritter Jr. is going to retire. Now, I can't say this for Ritter, but Dorgan and Dodd helped Congress sell out to Wall Street what was left to sell out. Essentially, again, the gangsters are burning the building down to collect the insurance. So suddenly these guys, oh God, they need to spend a lot of time with their family. A third uninvited guest has been discovered in video of the vaunted November state dinner featuring representatives from India, of course featuring the big White House party crashers that kept everyone riveted through December. Furthering the meme of Obama as the hacked presidency, again, websites, Twitter accounts, passports, meetings, parties, all of it. And the last couple notes on the Obamasiah and all the criminal cabinets and cronies. C-SPAN health negotiations preempted. That's from InfoWars. And we've also got The Daily Show actually slamming Obama for not keeping his campaign promises. And we're going to tie all this together with a compilation clip of all the times Obama talked about making everything open and transparent, and you'll see it all on C-SPAN.
Not negotiating behind closed doors, but bringing all parties together and broadcasting those negotiations on C-SPAN so that the American people can see what the choices are. Because part of what we have to do is enlist the American people in this process.
I would put my plan forward, and I would welcome input and say, here are my goals, reduce costs, increase quality, coverage for everybody. If you have better ideas, please present them. But these negotiations will be on C-SPAN. And so the public will be part of the conversation and will see the choices that are being made.
You know, I respect what the Clintons tried to do in 1993 in moving health reform forward. But they made one really big mistake, and that is they took all their people and all their experts into a room and then they closed the door. We will work on this process publicly. It'll be on C-SPAN. It will be streaming over the net.
We'll have the negotiations televised on C-SPAN so that people can see who is making arguments on behalf of their constituents and who are making arguments on behalf of the drug companies or the insurance companies.
But here's the thing. We're going to do all these negotiations on C-SPAN. So the American people will be able to watch these negotiations.
Drug and insurance companies will have a seat at the table. They just won't be able to buy every single chair. And we will have a public process for forming this plan. It'll be televised on C-SPAN. I can't guarantee it'll be exciting, so not everybody is going to be watching it. Mm-hmm. But it will be transparent and accountable to the American people.
To the drug and the insurance companies, who are still going to have a lot of power in Washington, and are still going to try to block reforms from taking place. And so that's why I said, for example, that I want the negotiations to be taking place on C-SPAN.
So I'll put forward my plan, but what I'll say is, look, if you've got better ideas, I'm happy to listen to them. But all this will be done on C-SPAN, in front of the public.
And one of my jobs as the president will be to guide this process so that it's an honest process.
So, sorry to pummel you with that clip, but, you know, in my line of work, you know, you kind of need to repeat things in order to catapult the propaganda. A few notes on Police State International. Of course, Times Square was a police state on New Year's Eve. We've also got a couple being arrested for homeschooling in New York. The District of Criminals used prisoners to shovel snowbound D.C. That's from Raw Story. And the Pew Research Center notes that the 2000s rate as the worst decade in 50 years. All that info and the abstract and their criteria are available on people-press.org. We also note the mass amount of new laws. 40,000 plus new laws went into effect on New Year's Day.
Before you light up, fry it up, text, or tan, check the map. Three more states are taking a stand against smoking in bars and restaurants. Michigan, Wisconsin, and in a landmark victory for anti-smoking advocates, North Carolina, the nation's largest tobacco producer.
From a business standpoint, I'm looking forward to it.
I think the individual restaurant owners ought to be able to make their own decision.
Oregon, Illinois, and New Hampshire joined 16 other states in recognizing the danger of texting while driving.
Hopefully, by the end of the year, we'll have a ban nationwide.
Amen.
New Hampshire also becomes the fifth state allowing same-sex marriage.
Across the country, lawmakers took up issues from the progressive to what some would consider absurd. Out west, it's now illegal for ranchers to cut off a cow's tail to avoid having to clean the animal. In Massachusetts, after 75 years, no more dog races. And in Texas, teenagers can no longer use a tanning salon without an adult.
Once again, California leads the way with the most new laws. From installing breathalyzers in the cars of some first-time drunk drivers...
We believe that it will help us to bring down the number of incidents involving drunk drivers on our state highways.
To making it easier for celebrities to sue aggressive paparazzi, a law credited to actress Jennifer Aniston. The Golden State also becomes the first in the nation to ban the use of trans fat in restaurants. It's all too much government for some.
Making sure that people, you know, eat healthy is something that should be up to them and that the government has better things to do.
For now, there won't be any policing of trans fat at donut shops or bakeries. They'll be exempt for 2010, giving them time to work on a new recipe for a new decade. Manuel Gallegos, CBS News, New York.
Ban everything. And of course, every new law just makes a new criminal. But let's get the last few headlines here on this 1-7 News Purge. So this is the new year. War horrors updates. Afghan death toll more than doubles in 2009. That's from militarytimes.com. December was the first month without a single U.S. combat death in Iraq. Of course, not counting friendly fire and suicides and the like. An interesting note by way of examiner.com. National Guard says always place mission first and not the, Constitution. Yeah, that. Changing the motto. Northrop Grumman moving their HQ from L.A. to D.C., and the last note here, as Afghan war escalates, military expert predicts 300 to 500 U.S. troops killed or wounded per month. That coming from Alternet. A quick note from Reuters, U.S. growth prospects deemed bleak in new decade. A dismal job market. Crippled real estate sector, hobbled banks will keep a lid on U.S. economic growth over the coming decade, some of the nation's leading economists said on Sunday. Speaking at the American Economic Association's mammoth yearly gathering, you can read more at vanderbilt.edu/AEA. Experts from a range of political leanings were in surprise agreement when it came to the chances for a robust and sustained expansion. They are slim. Let's shift gears again and return to our good friend James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. One of his great new videos, again pointing out the lie of the current puppet. Afghanistan is not the right war.
If history has taught us anything, it is that we need to beware those populist politicians who claim to be men of peace by nature, but men of war by necessity. The most violent wars this planet has ever seen, the most brutal regimes that have ever sought to repress their own citizens, the most genocidal schemes, have always been nurtured under the leadership of politicians who offer war, violence, and domination as a means of achieving peace. Napoleon waged wars of aggression in country after country, terrorizing the peoples of Europe and ravaging their lands in the name of a continent-wide peace under the French flag. Hitler, too, assured the world that his conquests were born of necessity, a means to achieve the living space that the German people required to live in peace. Vietnam, too, was a war to achieve peace. If Vietnam fell to the communists, the world was told, the dominoes would begin to fall in country after country, and it would not be long before the red tide flooded western shores. Wars are always waged in the name of utopia. Blood is always spilt in the name of the noble cause. In our own times, we have seen firsthand how the language of peace has been used to sell us on war. The war in Iraq, we were told, was a war for peace. A war to prevent a madman from using weapons we now know he never had. We were asked to ignore the no-bid contracts, the seizing of oil, the dead civilians, the use of white phosphorus in Fallujah, the thousands of tons of depleted uranium munitions used in that conflict, leading to as many as 75% of newborn babies in some areas of the country being born with severe deformities, 24% of whom die in their first week of life. We were assured this mission of peace would be a cakewalk. Then it was mission accomplished. Soon, the Iraqis had become insurgents, and the war became a security operation. Roadside bombs became IEDs, the escalation became a surge, and the replacement of uniformed military personnel for private contractors became a drawdown. Eventually, the tissue of lies that was the Iraq War became too thin for even President Bush's own party to support. During the 2008 presidential primaries, the candidate who received the most donations from active duty military personnel was neither Obama nor McCain, but Ron Paul, one of the only candidates who proposed bringing all of the troops home immediately upon taking office. Not some of the troops, not in a few years, not after a surge, but all of the troops, immediately.
Afghanistan is not the right war. Well put from CorbettReport.com. Which brings us to our latest episode of The New World next week. If you're keeping score, it's the 13th episode of the new video series, weekly 10-minute YouTube video series from MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com. On this latest episode, we go over all of the, not all of the, Flight 253 updates. We also go over China and the Great Firewall. And also a story we're going to hit in just a moment. I'm really proud of these videos. James does a great job putting them together. They're 10 minutes. They're a bite-sized blast in the info war. I think they're great to hand out to folks who will never listen to a two-hour podcast of me and weird music. Although they should, but they won't. Think of folks like your parents. Your parents might like it. Please try and spread the word about The New World next week. And again, if you subscribe to Media Monarchy through iTunes, you'll get an MP4, an iPod-ready version of The New World next week. feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. Put that into iTunes. You'll get all the audio shows as MP3s, and you'll get all the New World next weeks as MP4s. So with the remaining a little bit of time, I've been neglecting my sister sites, cyberspacewar.com and foodworldorder.com. So first, on the front page right now, foodworldorder.com, another melamine-tainted milk scandal in China. This from NTD TV, a new milk safety scandal has broken out in China. That may sound familiar, of course, because it's happened again and again.
A new milk safety scandal has broken out in China. Authorities in Shanghai have closed a dairy company and arrested three executives after milk products were found to contain high levels of the toxic industrial chemical melamine. According to the state-run Shanghai Daily, melamine was found in milk powder and condensed milk made by the Shanghai Panda Dairy Co. Limited. Melamine is a toxic chemical used for making plastic. When added to food, it can make the protein content appear higher, but it's highly detrimental to human health. Last year, more than 300,000 children were poisoned. At least six died after drinking the tainted milk, according to Chinese state-run media. In a similar incident last month, Chinese authorities also arrested three employees of the Shaanxi Jingqiao Dairy Company for producing melamine-tainted milk.
That clip is also available on youtube.com/Media Monarchy, and we're on foodworldorder.com, where no, this isn't from The Onion. It's actually from KMOX.com. Monsanto named Company of the Year by Forbes magazine. St. Louis-based Monsanto has been named 2009 Company of the Year by Forbes. The publication cites Monsanto's ongoing work in the field of bioengineering to improve crop yields and feed an ever-growing world population. You can read the whole article with the link to Forbes, The Planet versus Monsanto. Beef Products Incorporated injects your meat with ammonia. The New York Times reporting on the safety of beef processing method. 8 years ago, federal officials were struggling to remove potentially deadly E. coli from hamburgers when an entrepreneurial company from South Dakota came up with a novel idea. Inject beef with ammonia. You need to see the photos. You need to read the supplemental contextual links. And even hit the related stories of a new recall of E. coli tainted beef. That's from eatdrinkbetter.com. And California, or rather a court, rejecting California's strict warnings about chemicals in meat. But again, they all tell you it's your evil carbon footprint. But your meat is poison. Your seeds are GMO. And your water is in horrible plastic. Which brings us to the next one from allgov.com. Bottled water sales leaking, but tap water increasingly unsafe. Screwed both ways. Whether it's pressure from the economy or pressure from environmentalists, bottled water sales are declining after years of growth. Sales dropped 3.2% in 2008 and are expected to fall another 2% at the end of 2009. Industry leaders are insisting the decline is temporary and that sales will rebound once consumers begin to enjoy better times. But we note quickly that in addition to filling up landfills, the bottles manufacturing requires more than 17 million barrels of oil each year. Important flashbacks on foodworldorder.com. Millions in U.S. drink dirty water. And the story about Fiji water, spin the bottle, the politics of water. The last note here on the front page of foodworldorder.com. We don't have enough time to hit all the stories that we've missed while I was on hiatus throughout December. But again, they're all there for you. Nestle sells 100% juice that isn't. What a surprise. Let's quickly now move over to cyberspacewar.com, where the top of the page right now goes into New Zealand Skype surveillance and the planets. But first, from stuff.co.nz, New Zealand cyber spies win new powers. The new cyber monitoring measures have been quietly introduced, giving police and security intelligence services officers the power to monitor all aspects of someone's online life. The measures are the largest expansion of police and SIS surveillance capabilities for decades and mean that all mobile calls and texts, emails, internet surfing, online shopping, chatting, social networking can be monitored anywhere in New Zealand. Can even monitor a person's location by detecting their mobile phone, all of this occurring almost instantaneously. A few other unrelated headlines. NASA's Kepler probe finds five strange new planets. Facebook app maker hit with a data breach class action lawsuit. Pentagon Computer Network Defense Command delayed by congressional concerns. A decade's worth of IPv4 addresses. More on that from ArsTechnica.com. Canada says no to the Yes Men's website. An interesting note on adding a credit card reading function to the iPhone. That's from GearFuse.com. And the note on Skype. Integrating Skype into the family TV. Net-connected mic and cam in every living room. The article that we went into on The New World Next Week, China enjoys bursts of net freedom as Great Firewall falls, briefly, from the Los Angeles Times. For a couple of precious hours Monday, the Chinese government's web censoring system, popularly known as the Great Firewall, was lifted. Suddenly, internet users had access to websites that had been banned for months, like YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. It seemed just like a dream, said Michael Ante, a social critic and one of hundreds who tweeted about the development on Twitter. In many respects, it was. Now it's back to censorship business as usual. Of course, you should also check out greatfirewallofchina.org. Russians to save Earth from asteroid in 2036. More on that from allgov.com, where you can read about Armageddon and lives at stake. But a quick note, what I referenced a little while ago as we were going over all the Flight 253 updates, this from Threat Level. TSA threatens blogger who posted new screening directive. This going back to New Year's Eve. Two bloggers received home visits from TSA agents after they published a new TSA directive that revises screening procedures and puts new restrictions on passengers in the wake of the paranoia of Mutilab. Special agents from the TSA's Office of Inspection interrogated two U.S. bloggers, one of them an established travel columnist, and served each of them with a civil subpoena demanding info on the anonymous source that provided the TSA document. Now, what these guys have said in their defense was that it wasn't private, it gets sent out all over the world. The interesting note, and again, to find out more about this story and to flesh it out more, Feds withdraw subpoena over security memo, and that's from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Interestingly enough, from threat level, blogger's Twitter account implicated in TSA leak hunt. Basically what happened when they were doing their initial interrogation of these guys, they got dude's phone and typed out this. To the gentleman who sent Flying with Fish the TSA security directive, thank you. Can you drop me an email? I have a question. Thanks, Fish. That would be Stephen Frischling of Flying with Fish, the established travel blogger. TSA agent John Enright, I believe, typed that message into Frischling's BlackBerry and handed it back to him and told him to click the send button. Blogger's Twitter account implicated in TSA leak hunt. That's going to do it, my friends, for all those headlines. And again, that's just the stuff that's on the front page of Food World Order and Cyberspace War. No time anymore to dig back too far into the old dirty year of 2009, because it's a new decade. Or as we asked earlier, so this is the new year. Before we wrap it up, I was wrong last week to not give you a quick list of some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We track some of the visitors through StatCounter.com, and sometimes the visits and their questions and how they got there and where they're coming from can give interesting insight into the news I'm covering. United Healthcare Corporation out of Minneapolis, NBC Universal out of Universal City, California, Fox News, D.C., the DOD Network Information Center out of Kings Bay, Georgia, Googled NUWAIX11 Information Assurance. And that's something basically that anagram means something about a nuclear exercise, which they were running last year in the summer under the banner of Ardent Century. More visits from Fort Huachuca, Arizona. USACE.Army.mil. We also had the Associated Newspapers Limited out of London, the Canadian National Railway out of Montreal, and lastly, the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities out of Juneau. Those are just some of the interesting or funny visits to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. My friends, that's going to do it for this January 8th, 2010, episode 152 of MediaMonarchy.com. Your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We will be back next week, as always, with a new episode. And again, always look for interviews and B-sides and mixtapes and the new world next week. And make contact with me through any number of the ways. Because again, we share information. We can make better decisions if we're better informed. That's what we're trying to do. My friends, like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.